Ambassador Young, just give me your reflections on this weekend.
Well, you know, the thing I said last night was, there's an old African proverb that says, you're not dead until people stop talking about you. And that means that Martin Luther King is very much alive, because I think I've been to 152 countries, and I've never been anywhere where people are not still not only talking about him and asking about him, but really appreciating what he did in 39 short years of life. And when I come here and I see the turnout of people from all over the world are coming here to just say that they still remember, they still care, and they still appreciate the things that he gave his life for that we have not accomplished yet. He was trying to help the poor, and we still have a long way to go. There's still too many hungry people. There's still too many people who don't get basic education. There's still too many people who don't have even primary health care and basic nutrition. And so I'm assuming, and I'm interpreting this, as people who are not coming to do anything but recommit to the mission and message of Martin Luther King. And I'm glad that Texas A&M and Commerce has been one of the groups that has insisted on keeping alive his values, because his values basically were the values of the Bible and of Jesus of Nazareth and the prophets. And he just lived them such. He spoke them so eloquently, and he wasn't just talking. He lived every day of his life by his beliefs, even to the threat of death.
Ambassador, in the last couple of days, I've heard some people say that we've slipped, that because of the rhetoric that's coming out of Washington and politicians, the status of poor people and immigrants really puts them into doubt. How far we've really come.
Well, I tell you what, another way of looking at that is that we have made enormous progress in business, in agriculture, in medicine. One thing about all those fields is that a few people can develop an iPhone in a garage. A few doctors can do research in a laboratory. But when you look at politics, it takes 60% of the planet, of the world in this country to make change. Now, we actually had a majority in the election, but the Electoral College gave the president the slight edge. So Dr. King used to say that when we're in a crisis, one way he was taught to look at it is that the world is always in a struggle between good and evil, and the decision that you make might be the one that decides. And I think what we saw last couple of weeks, when all of these young people from Florida came up, and they were so intelligent, they were so calm, they were so logical, and that and they have been baptized in the blood of their classmates. I mean, those kids were there because they had people dying right next to them. It wasn't an emotional thing. I think that they are committed for life.
It sounds like you're optimistic about the coming generation.
I'm not the coming generation, because I really have been critical of Black Lives Matter, not because they're not intense, but because they're too emotional. And you can get emotional and get angry, and that'll lead you to destruction. my daddy raised me from 4 years old in Louisiana, that you don't ever lose your temper in a fight. You don't get angry. When you get angry, the blood runs from your head and you do something stupid. And I remember every time there was something, even the fight between Muhammad Ali and Sonny Liston. Sonny Liston was a great big old bear of a guy. And Muhammad Ali was a little skinny guy. And Muhammad Ali made Sonny Liston mad. And I said, he ought not be provoking that big old guy like that. That big old guy is going to kill him. And my daddy said, no, he has lost his temper. He's gotten mad. He's going to get knocked out. I said, how is that little skinny boy going to knock him out? He said, because he's using his head as well as his fist. Now, all I'm saying to Black Lives Matter is they're college students. See, they have brilliant minds. Don't use your emotion. Use your mind. Don't get mad. Get smart. And if they get smart, they will be a powerful force to deal with. But if they're going out here as they are, just making noise, the most powerful, you know, I've seen demonstrations all over the world. The most powerful demonstrations I've seen are the silent ones. And if you remember at, I think it was Nebraska, where they had the most impact on their college campus. But they didn't have big marches. They had one guy who sat on the steps of the administration building and fasted for 10 days. And he wasn't saying a word. He just sat there quietly, and everybody knew he was praying and fasting. Before you know it, they started asking about what he was doing this for. The next thing you know, the whole football team had joined in, and they were threatening not to play. The coach got fired, the president got fired, and everything got cleaned up. But there was no noise made on that campus. There was one voice, there was one soul that was silent and spiritually powerful. And so the power of the spirit is so much greater than the power of anger and frustration.
Let me ask you something about being here in Memphis on this day. There's the classic photo of you standing on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel, but there's a new classic photo of you standing there with Jesse Jackson in the same spot. What was going on in your mind when you stood there in that spot 50 years later?
Almost the same thing that was there 50 years ago. The police were running toward us, and we were pointing, saying the shot came from over there. See? And they were running away from where the shot came from. They didn't need to come see us. They needed to find out who did the shooting. But they all left the area that the shot came from, coming over to see about us. See? And sitting there, standing there with Jesse, I thought about the same thing, because we took Dr. King to the hospital. We got there about 7 o'clock, and by 8 o'clock we knew he was dead. And we got back to the hotel, that same spot, about 9 o'clock. All of those bushes that we were pointing to, they'd all been cut down. And when we asked why are you cutting down those bushes, they said the Memphis police told us to do that. And there was something not right about this assassination. And I don't want to find out what was not right. I don't care. But I want people to know that this was not as simple as one crazy man doing something stupid.
And even in your gut, when you say there's something not right about this assassination, can you go a little deeper on that?
No, I can't. Because I was given an opportunity when I was in Congress to be the chair of the Assassination Committee and do the research on it as a member of Congress. And I said I was not interested. It doesn't matter who killed Martin Luther King. We know what killed Martin Luther King. And it was a systemic racism and you know, bigotry in this country. And it doesn't matter who pulled the trigger. What we're against is the systematic evil that is oppressive to poor people, that neglects education, that neglects health care, that neglects food for the hungry, and that that doesn't understand that we're all children of the same God. We're living under the same flag, and it's much more important that we fight for justice than we punish somebody for it. In fact, I don't even hold anything against whoever killed Martin Luther King, basically set his spirit free. And they did not kill him. But his body's gone. But his spirit is with us all over the world, greater than it ever was when it was just one 39-year-old who was 160 pounds and 5 feet 7 inches tall. Now you have at least a 30-foot statue in Washington that everybody has to see every time they come to Washington. You cannot go anywhere in the world where they're not quoting Martin Luther King in some way or other, that his message and the power of his spirit. And so I'm here really just to remind people that his death was not an end. It was the beginning, and you just got to keep on keeping on. And that's basically what I try to do. I was 36, now I'm 86. But they work in me almost as much more now than they were back then. And so I'm really grateful when I made a partnership with you all at Texas A&M in Commerce, because I sense some of the spirit of Martin Luther King, though I don't think he ever came there. But when I came there, that's what I brought, was the spirit of Martin Luther King about feeding the hungry, about developing creative systems of scientific agriculture. And the president and the dean of the Department of Agriculture, I mean, I was shocked that they were so interested. See? But it means that Martin Luther King's spirit and it really is not different. Martin Luther King's spirit is pretty close to Jesus' spirit. And Jesus' spirit is an outgrowth of the spirit of the Hebrew prophets. And so we're keeping on, keeping on. And I'm really grateful that you came. And I'll be there to see you before long.
All right.
We're on the same side. And we're going to keep on till the hungry are fed, the naked are clothed, the sick are healed, and those who are oppressed know the freedom and justice and power of our Lord.
Come see us in Congress.
I'll be there soon.
Thank you.
Thank you.